Hello and welcome to JP Morgan's At Any Rate podcast channel. I am Luis Oganes, Head of Global Macro Research. We're excited to let our listeners know that we are expanding the breadth of At Any Rate beyond research insights on rates and credit markets, and will now also include discussions on our views on commodities, currencies, and emerging markets. We thought it would be valuable for our listeners to highlight broader insights from our research bench, given the interconnected and fast-moving nature of markets. Today's discussion will focus on U.S. rate markets and will be led by my colleague, Alex Rover, Head of U.S. Rate Strategy. Over to you, Alex.
Thanks, Luis. Hi, this is Alex Rover from the Fixed Income Strategy Team at JP Morgan. We're recording this on January 27th, and yesterday on January 26th, we had the first FOMC meeting of the year. So we gathered together some of our analysts and economists to talk about what we learned and may not have learned from yesterday. Let's start off with Mike Feroli, our chief U.S. economist. So Mike, we're about 24 hours, after the Fed meeting, recording this. What were we surprised by at the meeting and what were you not surprised by?
Yeah, so we weren't surprised by anything that happened at 2 p.m., which is that they signaled that rate hike in March is very likely to occur and that balance sheet expansion, asset purchases were very likely to end in mid-March. So both of those things were confirmed at 2 p.m. I think what we learned or what was surprising came in Chair Powell's remarks, which seemed to be, they were in response to a question, but they did seem to be scripted or read from, in which he was asked about, should we expect rate hike cycle like the last one we saw, which was one where the Fed talked about a gradual normalization of policy and rate hikes that occurred once a quarter. And in his prepared or scripted, it seems, remarks, basically said, this isn't the same economy that we had in the last cycle. And so don't expect the same sort of policy path. And in particular, he pointed out stronger growth, a tighter labor market, and obviously a much higher inflation. So he seemed to kind of dissuade people from getting too comfortable, or tried to dissuade people, I think, effectively from getting too comfortable with a view that we're just going to be hiking once a quarter at the SEP meetings, and it's going to be past his prologue. So I thought that was what was the most notable thing that came out of the press conference. And also, I should say, it wasn't a one-off. He basically repeated that theme a couple times in the press conference that this isn't the 2010s economy.
So it seems like he wanted to give the impression that they could do more if the circumstances warranted it.
Yeah. He didn't say this is definitely what they're doing, but I think he wanted to gain the optionality and let the market know that the Fed has the optionality to go every meeting if that's what conditions called for. He was quick to point out that nothing's been decided, but I do think the purpose of his comments was to inform the market that, they meet eight times a year, and there's a reason they meet eight times a year and not four, and that they, if need be, they'll use all of those meetings to adjust policy.
And we didn't get much in terms of the mechanics of what, the balance sheet grain might look like down the road. But was there anything in that conversation that seemed new or different to you?
No, they did. I should have mentioned they did release a set of principles of balance sheet normalization, all of which were uncontroversial, that, that it would start after rate hikes commenced, that rate hikes would be the principal tool, that runoff would be the preferred, approach or halting reinvestments. So I don't think we learned that, we certainly didn't learn as much about balance sheet, in my opinion, as we learned about the potential path of policy rates. Now, we did learn, and one of the reasons we didn't learn a lot about balance sheet is because we already learned a lot about balance sheet in the minutes to the December meeting, which were a little more, I think, informative, particularly when it comes to timing of balance sheet normalization as well as pace of balance sheet normalization. And if that pattern holds, then I would suspect that when we get the minutes to the to yesterday's meeting in 3 weeks, a little less than 3 weeks' time, that we could see a more, you know, richer discussion of opinions, various opinions on, you know, timing and pace, which I think is really what the market, my perception is what the market's focused on right now. So I would keep an eye out for that in mid-February.
Yeah. So in terms of the timing and pace conversations, we're heading into a period of Fed speak. Is that what you think, you know, we're probably going to hear, you know, variations on, or anything else in there that?
Yeah, you know, certainly after the December minutes, we did, we got a few Fed speakers out there throwing out their preferences in terms of, you know, when normalization began and, you know, the size of the monthly cap. So I would think that could be a feature of, you know, of upcoming Fed speak.
Okay, before we let you go, I guess I need to ask about what are the implications of the situation in Ukraine for potential Fed policy? Put out a note earlier in the week. So just curious on your thoughts there.
Yeah. So as it gets into hypotheticals, I think if we were to see a military situation that really pushed up the price of oil, and I think, you know, that's going to be the principal channel through which any conflict there would affect the U.S. economy. I think, you know, trade linkages and the financial linkages with either of the potential belligerents and the U.S. are pretty small. But of course, the oil market is a global market. So if that were to lead to a really big increase in the price of oil, you know, generally how the Fed has responded to oil price shocks, and you know, in principle, it's a dilemma because it pushes you farther away from both your growth and inflation objectives. Generally speaking, the Fed has focused more on the growth aspects, provided that inflation expectations remain well anchored, which they generally, I would say, have been. So if that, you know, if we get another big oil shock with inflation expectations remaining well anchored, I would think the Fed would emphasize the growth implications. That might not mean a halt to the, you know, hiking cycle, but it may start to take, you know, this talk of going every meeting or going 50 basis points. I think that would probably, in my opinion, get shelved if oil really went up, you know, 120, whatever you want to call it, and inflation expectations are anchored. I think then the Fed would just probably moderate the pace at which they move rates up is my best guess.
Thanks, Mike. Let's turn to Jay now and talk a little bit about what's happening in the Treasury market. How did Treasury markets react to the Fed meeting yesterday, Jay?
Yeah, sure, Alex. So, you know, I think the first reaction was a steady move higher in yield across the curve and a bearish flattening. As, you know, given what Mike discussed, markets are certainly interpreting this that there's some likelihood that the Fed goes faster than a quarterly pace. So we were pricing in close to four hikes from liftoff onward, and now we're pricing in a faster pace of rate hikes. So it's quite interesting that markets are pricing in pretty close to three hikes by the June Fed meeting right now. So pretty close to pricing in a per meeting pace there. And I think it's because of the language that the chair used. I mean, if the last cycle was a gradual cycle in which the Fed was raising rates at 25 basis points per quarter, and he said, you know, he's not using that watchword. And the 2004 to 2006 cycle, which the Fed was moving 25 basis points per meeting, was measured. The chair has introduced this sort of statement about steadily moving away from accommodative levels, which seemed to be somewhere in between. So the markets embraced that. But what's really interesting, Alex, in this is that the market hasn't repriced the cumulative total of Fed tightening over the cycle. So we're still pricing in a peak funds rate of about 1.75, just pricing in it earlier by the end of 2023 versus the early part of 2024. So, you know, that's kind of been the story in the rates markets thus far. And, you know, as I think about what's happened here, it makes complete sense that the yield curve should have flattened further against this backdrop, because we've learned not a whole lot new about the balance sheet process. And as Mike said, we'll wait for the minutes of this meeting to perhaps learn more, but we've brought forward potentially the pace of rate hike. So in that case, it does warrant a flatter curve than previously. So I think that's sort of been the interpretation from the Treasury market, all is equal, because it's hard to discern from here. And what we haven't learned is it's so early in the cycle is that exactly how much the Fed will need to raise rates. And we'll probably learn more about that at the next meeting in March as well.
Does it feel to you like the curve's likely to, you know, remain, you know, flatter through this cycle, similar to what we saw in the prior cycle?
I think it absolutely does. You know, it's very interesting that when we sort of peek away at the nuances of what we learned yesterday, while everything on the rate side was definitely hawkish in the press conference, one could argue that it was sort of dovish if you squint on the balance sheet, right? Because when asked about when they'll talk about balance sheet normalization, the chair sort of gave away that they're going to talk about it for at least the next 1 to 2 meetings, which gets you to May. He also told us that he wanted to give us advance notice before the balance sheet normalization QT process starts. So arguably, that still leaves the onset of balance sheet normalization sometime closer to the summer, whereas we brought all these rate hikes forward. So I think that definitively, you know, adds some flattening pressure overall. Second, even when balance sheet normalization occurs, you know, we've done all this work that over the QE lifespan from 2009 onward, on average, 10-year yields seem to have declined, you know, 10 to 15 basis points for every $1 trillion of QE. But the one thing I'd say is that I think that was more meaningful when the balance sheet was smaller, rates were higher and term premium were higher close to a decade ago than they are right now. Second, you know, I think because the Fed is actively buying duration when it's doing QE, the fact of it's letting it run off is a more passive action, which should reduce the impact on rate levels overall. And third, and this is where the supply story side matters, in all likelihood, if we look at the last cycle, the Treasury Department funded this all at the short end of the curve, which makes sense because these funding needs are cyclical in nature. They are not structural as the Fed normalizes its balance sheet, and mainly in the 2 to 5 year sector of the curve. You know, I think we'd anticipate this time something similar to happen. I can get into more detail there, but all in, this seems to point flatter. And then finally, you know, it's something that, you know, we've been highlighting in research since the outlook is pension funded ratios have climbed up to, you know, fully funded status. And, you know, as we look at it, it's, you know, it's a meaningful driver of rate levels overall. And while that happened in the strips market, mainly last year, you know, something we talked about in the outlook is that, you know, the funded ratio seems to matter for curve levels right now. So that's likely to anchor flatter curves as well. So all in, you know, I think easy to expect the yield curve to flatten further here from current levels, but potentially as we learn more about balance sheet normalization, maybe it becomes a bit more of a level shift for a period of time.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I guess we want to talk a little bit about refunding, which is coming up next week. But before we get there, you know, as we're thinking about, you know, the Fed beginning to let the balance sheet shrink, there's a lot of runoff that we get to before that. What should we think about what's going to happen with that runoff between now and we actually start to see, you know, the quantitative tightening?
Yeah. So, you know, we know that the Fed passively reinvests its maturing securities back into treasuries as an add-on. So what is publicly announced for non-Fed hands, they add on top of that, and the Fed just sort of buys at the auction award. So we know over the next 2 months, approximately two-thirds to three-quarters of the Fed's bill portfolio rolls over and it will continue to reinvest it. There will be some short coupons maturing as well, which will need to roll over. So for the time being, it will continue to passively reinvest that. But once that stops and once balance sheet normalization begins again, that will require, it won't change Treasury's financing needs overall, but it will have to move away from passive Fed hands to active private investors. So all else equal, more financing needs from non-Fed hands once that occurs.
Makes sense. Okay. So for the February refunding, you put out your refunding preview the other day. Can you summarize that for us?
Yeah. So on balance, you know, I think what's interesting about this cycle is because Treasury ran so quickly to ramp up its borrowing capacity when COVID broke out this time almost 2 years ago, and because budget deficits have narrowed sharply from their peak in fiscal 20 and fiscal 21, where we are now with current auction sizes is Treasury remains very overfinanced relative to its borrowing needs. So if it kept auction sizes at stable at these levels, it would require a very large drawdown in bills outstanding, which we know certainly there seems to be very strong latent demand for T-bills because of still rising money market fund AUM in the govy space, very high RRP demand. It just all indicates there's a deficit of available high quality liquid assets at the front end. And also that Treasury is committed to keeping T-bills somewhere in between 15 to 20% of the total marketable debt outstanding. If it didn't change coupon auction sizes here, it would risk that falling further to an undesirably low share in the Treasury's terms. So we think next week, we're going to get another round of very large scale cuts like we did in November. In fact, identical to them, focusing more at the short end of the curve than at the long end, because the Treasury is also attempting to extend the WAM of its debt from current levels. So if we're right, you know, we're looking for a magnitude of cuts here in February, a smaller version of cuts in May. We had also penciled in cuts in August, but now we just don't think those occur, because since you're bringing balance sheet normalization further in and into 2022, that's going to incrementally increase the Treasury's financing needs from non-Fed investors. And at some point, it's going to mean that they're probably actually going to need to increase auction sizes. But to us, that's a 2023 episode. Unfortunately, they've been cutting so aggressively at the short to intermediate sector. We think that's the place that they can ramp them back up. So in short, we're looking for more cuts. They look a lot like what we saw in November. In fact, identical. We're hoping to learn more about the balance sheet strategy. And then I think we're hoping to learn more about the TIPS market as well, because we know Treasury has committed to increasing TIPS issuance this year, more to get the TIPS share of debt back to more normal levels. But it's going to take some time to get there. So I think we're going to learn a lot about that as well.
Thanks, Jay. Let's turn now to Srini Ramaswamy and talk a little bit about what's going on in derivative space. So Srini, Powell took a more hawkish tone relative to the expectations, especially his comments about the appropriate pace of policy adjustments. What do you take away from the tone, and how does it impact what you're thinking about markets?
Yeah, I would echo a little bit of what both Mike and Jay have alluded to. In a sense, it seemed to me that Chairman Powell was telling us that this isn't your father's tightening cycle, it's more like your grandfather's tightening cycle. And by that, I mean, don't think about the glacial pace of hikes in 2017 and 2018. Instead, it's likely to be something at least between that and more like the 2004-2006 cycle. Bottom line, Chairman Powell made the point that the kind of, forward rates are far from pricing in the likely pace of normalization that the Fed thinks might be necessary. Given where we are, we are at elevated inflation, tight labor markets. We are in a state of the economy that's considerably different than 2017. And therefore, the policy response will probably be different. We did learn more about rates than we did about balance sheets. So in a sense, not too much changes regarding sort of quantitative tightening and balance sheet normalization for the Fed, but certainly with respect to rates. I mean, Jay mentioned the very front end of the curve is repriced. We are now pricing in pretty much a hike every meeting for the remainder of 2022 once they get going, but not so much in the year that follows, right? I mean, terminal rates remain considerably below where the Fed is likely to take short rates. So this for us echoes one more theme that we have, sort of touched upon for active Fed cycles. And that is, don't pile into positive carry trades. Positive carry trades work nicely when the Fed is on hold, but when the Fed is hiking rates, the forwards seem to underprice where the Fed will actually go, which means, positive carry trades tend to do badly. And that's a theme that, after yesterday's meeting, we just have more conviction in. And beyond that, I would say it does seem, looking at swap spreads and, the derivatives markets, it seems to us that not just rates, but even spreads aren't fully pricing in the impact of the Fed's stepping away from the market. So we still think intermediate swap spreads have, more room to narrow.
That makes sense. I guess one of the series of questions we've been getting lately has been about what this implies for banks going forward. Do you have thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it should broadly help banks. I think to the extent that quantitative tightening, even though we didn't learn too much yesterday, the hawkish tone, perhaps suggests that there could be risks of more rapid normalization, in the Fed's balance sheet than we might be pricing in. And to the extent that those risks pan out, or even if they don't, there is, if you're a bank, you have more conviction in the path of Fed normalization. And what that does for banks is it helps the process of normalizing bank balance sheets. Bank balance sheets are sort of in a in a very elevated state. They are much larger than they would organically be because of deposit creation from quantitative easing, that we've had in the past few years. And even compositionally, bank balance sheets are sort of different than what they would organically be. And, you know, QT helps the process of normalization, both with respect to size, but also sort of composition. And I think broadly, it's helpful for banks. They have, you know, banks would have more conviction in sort of the year ahead and how that helps alleviate some of the pressures that they've been dealing with respect to leverage constraints and so on. So I think it also means that bank demand for securities, you know, which have really been sort of the consequence of, you know, sort of broad and large ALM mismatches because of deposit creation, I think that bank demand for securities should moderate and, you know, certainly remains relatively strong, you know, in relation to history, but it should moderate from sort of the strength of like 2021.
Thanks, Srini. And thanks to Mike Feroli and Jay Barry also. I'm your host, Alex Rover, and I want to thank you again for joining. Please stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content and for more information, including important disclosures. JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on January 27th, 2022.